Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Chloe McArdle is a name that everyone listening should know. Now, if you haven't, well, you should. The 36-year-old Aussie just completed her 44th crossing of the English Channel a little after 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon, eclipsing the previous record held by British swimmer Alison Streeter. Chloe's joining us on the line to tell us her story. Welcome, Chloe.
Hi, guys.
Now, Chloe, you're speaking to a journalist and a former professional athlete. So my first question to you is, what on earth do you think about when you're swimming all that way in open water?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There are so many hours to kill out there. I've got a few different strategies. At least for the first few hours, I'm trying to find a rhythm, because when you're out there, usually there's a little bit of chop and waves, and you try and balance yourself. I try and have an efficient stroke to maximize my movement forward and minimize how much time I'm taking. And then I'm also trying to keep an exact distance from the boat of 2 to 3 meters, because if I start going out or coming in, then I'm zigzagging across the English Channel, which, as you can guess, is going to add like kilometers to my trip. So that's the first few hours. And I've got a few strategies. One of them actually is visualizing the successful finish. And that's what I do when I'm in a really bad place. And I go forward in the future and I think about, what does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it taste like? And then I go through that emotional state of actually finishing it. And if I'm in a really bad spot, that's a great trick I have to just draw myself out of that bad spot.
Chloe, it's Jimmy Bartelli. There's so many factors that we haven't even started to think about. Of course, you can't just rock up to the English Channel and go, I'm going to swim that today. When's the perfect conditions for you to do it? And temperature? Wouldn't it be freezing?
Mm.
Yeah, surprisingly, there's a waiting list to do such a difficult and horrible swim.
Really?
And I book most of my positions 2.5 to 3 years in advance. So there's a lot of logistics behind the scenes. There's no perfect day as such that we can predict in advance. Some days are definitely better than others, but that's completely random. So we're talking about wind, right? Mm. But in terms of water temperature, there's a little bit more predictability. So the season starts in early July. It ends usually the first few days of October. And so what that is that's midsummer over here going into the start of autumn. So the water temperature peaks are late summer. So that's the last week of August, first week of September, about then. So a lot of swimmers try and swim around that time. But interestingly, August is known as the windiest month in the channel. So those that are trying to get a slightly better water temperature often have to deal with more fickle weather or worse waves. So really, there's never a good time to swim the English Channel.
Chloe, I'm always fascinated by athletes like yourself who just do extraordinary things. It just blows the mind when you think English Channel. But you've also swam the record, the longest unassisted ocean swim, 124 kilometres in the Bahamas. I'm always fascinated by training. So, you know, we go down the pool and we're puffed and exhausted if we swam a K and we're holding on every 50 metres and hopefully it's a 25-metre pool.
Oh, speak for yourself.
But how do you train for 124-kilometre unassisted swim?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because no one had done anything on the distance before I did it. So there was no model to go on, no one to ask. And if I trained like I would normally train, which is doing higher volume than the actual distance, then I would just kind of like train myself into a hole of injury or burnout, psychological, physical. So I didn't train like I normally would. I actually trained like under that weekly volume distance. Well, there was one week I actually did 130 kilometres, but besides that week of training of that volume, I was sitting at about 80 kilometres, which sounds fairly conservative considering that event was 124. But if I trained any more, then I would have been too injured or unwell to actually attempt that swim. That was a warm water swim. It was in the Caribbean, so I didn't need to do cold water training like I do for the English Channel. It's something very specific for cold water marathons. You need to train literally in cold water. So that's like Melbourne, middle of winter, or Sydney, middle of winter, in Manly Dam, which gets cold. So the Caribbean one, basically I didn't think I could train for it, and I got to the point when I was out there where I was broken and had to just swim through a broken state.
Chloe, what's the most dangerous thing when you swim? And what would be the the prickliest situation you've gotten yourself into during your time?
Well, interestingly, people think sharks are probably my biggest worry or my biggest fear or biggest chance of dying. But it's been box jellyfish in the Caribbean that have nearly killed me, and also severe hypothermia in the English Channel. So in 2011, I was attempting to be the first Aussie to complete a triple non-stop crossing of the English Channel. Yeah. So that's get into England, swim to France, get out, swim back to England, get out, swim back to France, non-stop, 102 kilometres. So I didn't have enough body fat on me, so like fat around my organs to delay the onset of hypothermia. So I ended up getting severe hypothermia. They pulled me out of the water. Apparently, I don't remember, but apparently I was swimming with one arm and I wasn't following their instructions. And they're like, oh my God, she's lost it. Let's pull her out. By the time they got me to hospital and the doctor examined me, the doctor said to my crew, if you'd left her in there 30 minutes longer, she would have been dead. So people have died swimming the English Channel. Often the reason given from the coroner is cardiac arrest, but they don't know specifically, you know, was it from severe hypothermia leading to cardiac arrest? Was it like drowning from becoming unconscious then leading to cardiac arrest? And even one guy washed up in Belgium a few days after he was lost whilst crossing the English Channel. So for me, hypothermia is what worries me the most.
So, Chloe, I'm fascinated by all of this. People that achieve greatness in whether it's sport or another aspect of life, and they do these, forgive me for using this word, do these crazy things like you're doing, but they come from a position or an experience of pain or trauma. I've read quite a lot of your interviews that you've done across your time, and I think you said in one of them that your biggest weapon that you have is your mind. Where does that mental strength come from?
Yeah. You see, you can train to swim the English Channel once, twice, or, you know, attempt twice or three times, and be physically absolutely amazingly fit, just like an elite swimmer. Like I train with national level swimmers, so I've got that pace and I just stretch it a bit further and drop the pace a bit. But the mind is really the secret to marathon swimming, because unless you can convince yourself to keep stroking forward, no matter how fast, how strong, how experienced you are, your body will not follow unless your mind takes you there first. So although I believe training is really important, and I coach people as well to swim the channel, so I get them training, I also set them really hard swim camps so that I nearly break them on the swim camps. So when it comes to the English Channel and they're breaking, they actually go, oh yeah, well, I've actually been somewhere here before and got through it. So the mind element is huge. I've dealt with quite a lot of trauma in my adult life from domestic violence, but that hasn't really shaped me as an athlete. I was a very determined kid. I just wanted to be really good at something. And then when I was 19, I wanted to be the best in the world at something. So I had a drive that no one could talk me out of. My parents were very unsupportive. They kicked me out of home. They're like, you can do whatever you want with your life, but don't expect us to help you. So I was literally financially independent whilst trying to get through uni and train as an elite athlete, which is really hard. But those hard times just reinstilled the fact that I really earned this. I've deserved everything I get. I've worked super hard. Nothing's really been given to me. I don't get support from Swimming Australia at all. So it's been a super hard journey. So whenever things get tough, I just remind myself of what I've had to go through just to get opportunities. And, you know, that's a driving force for me as well. I can use that as motivation.
Chloe, nearly every sport, you know, they're measured in certain ways, or there's associations, you know, that hang above them and things like that. What are rules or things that we don't know about with open water swimming? So let's use the channel for an example. Do you have to leave from a certain point? When you did the triple crossing, was it you had to run up onto the sand and come back, or you could do a tumble turn? Is there things we don't know about it, the little technicalities of it?
Yeah, there's some curious things about channel swimming that public may not know. They try and keep the sport really consistent with the first people that swam it back in the late 1800s. So we're not allowed to wear a wetsuit, no shark cage, no flippers, nothing that might keep us warm. We start what's called above the waterline. And then when we enter the water, the marathon officially starts. For the English Channel, we're required to have a support boat there for safety and for feeding. So feeding is liquids and solids. So the liquids and solids usually lowered down every 30 minutes or so, and we tread water while we do that. So we're not allowed on the boat. So there's curious things like we're not allowed to touch the boat. We've got to stay in the water. We're not allowed anyone else to touch us. And then when we get to the other side, we've got to get out on our own steam. We can't be helped out of the water. And again, have to be past the waterline. Now, if we're attempting a double crossing or a triple crossing or something, then we have less than 10 minutes on shore before that next crossing must begin. And the curious thing with this, I think, is that the reason that is because we're not actually entering French shore, French country. We're not officially getting cleared by customs. So that's why we get kicked off the
You're not getting your passport stamped, I assume.
Yeah, no passport stamp, so you got to get offshore, get back in, keep swimming.
Chloe, it's an incredible story. We could talk about this for hours. I'm fascinated now. What are you going to do now? Now that you've reached the unachievable in so many people's eyes, what does Chloe McArdle's next couple of years look like?
Well, I absolutely love sharing my journey, my stories, trying to inspire as many people as possible. And I do quite a bit of keynote speaking into businesses in person, virtually, and even in schools. That's super special as well. So I hope to do more of that and just share a little bit about our sport and inspire people to have a go at open water swimming too. It has so many benefits.
Chloe, you're an inspiration to us all. I couldn't think of any better person to be talking at schools and inspiring young kids to be able to do something with their lives. We're privileged to call you an Australian, and hopefully we can touch base with you soon. We'd love to have you on regularly on Sports Day.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. Yeah, of course. I'd love to chat again. Thank you so much for your time.